First of all, I need some protection.
Oh, dear God. Okay, all right.
From underarm wetness. I'm never one to offend. And I need some feminine napkins.
Oh, I'm in hell. I'm in hell now.
You never know when Aunt Wilma's going to stop by for lunch.
What a bizarre character. This is John Williams, and we are at the Museum of Broadcast Communications at the Saturday Night Live exhibit. Do come and see this. And also, thanks to the whole staff that's been here. Violetta Pondermedics, get ready to run back to the Rokan Show. Steve Bertrand is here from WGN Radio News. I'm John Williams. Ernie's our engineer, and there is my producer, Elif Garris. You know Elif, among other things, not just as my producer, but as also as the voice of Siri on the John Williams Show.
Hi, John. How are you?
Exactly. So, also in our studio is Julia Sweeney. You know her as Pat. We just heard a clip from that from Saturday Night Live. Julia, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Now, we're not in New York. This is the real Saturday Night Live set, but obviously there's the Celebrity Jeopardy set, which was actually used on the show over there, and the front stage.
Yeah. No, it's great.
We're on the original Saturday Night Live Weekend Update set, or actually the one they used, I think, for the 40th anniversary show, but this was used on the show. Is this a little deja vu-y for
you? It is.
And when you think back on your Saturday Night Live experience, what comes first and foremost to mind?
It sounds so trite, but just how exciting it was on Saturday. Like, I love big efforts with lots of people all concentrating together, and when it all was coming together on Saturday, usually I got there about 1 o'clock on Saturday afternoon, and just like every hour at the building and the building and the building until the show was on, and then it was such a head rush, and then the party. That's probably what comes to mind.
So you guys would do a dress rehearsal in the evening, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then change things an hour before. Tell me about how all of that went.
Well, it was really stressful. And it was really...
In front of an audience.
Yeah, you did I think it was at 7 o'clock. Or maybe it was 8? I can't remember. Anyway, it was a show. You know, we did the entire show, and it was long. So it was really, sometimes it went like 2 hours long. And then you'd do the show, and then everyone would go up to Lauren's office in the 8th floor, because he had 2 different offices. So we went in that, and you sat on the floor, and there was a big grease board, and he started writing the show, and you would see if your sketch was cut or not. And people were writing stuff down and figuring out how they were getting from this sketch to the other.
And was that based all on audience reaction, or the way he saw it when he saw it done?
Yeah, and also the host had input, and...
Really?
Yeah, I mean, there was a bunch of factors, but it was his call in the end.
The gentleman that's the curator of this exhibit said he followed the show for a week or two, or maybe even longer, and he said that it was amazing to him, that there would sometimes be 30 or 35 sketches, pieces that were ready for broadcast, and you did not know what was going to make the cut, maybe until that day.
Yeah, and sometimes during the show, if something went long or got more laughs than you expected it to get, so it went on longer, your sketch could be cut. You could be walking. I've many times when I was walking onto the set and they would say, stop, the sketch has been cut.
You still get paid, though, right, for that?
Well, you just get a salary. It doesn't really matter.
But it explains the cue cards and why you're always reading.
Yeah. Also, sometimes you'd have writers come up to you and say, I've changed all your lines in this sketch. Oh, go, 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 go. Just be sure to look at the cue cards.
Well, I suppose every person who's created an iconic Saturday Night character gets asked about it for the rest of their lives, right?
I guess that's true.
So this is that part of the
interview. You're not there yet.
How did you create Pat, the androgynous character whose gender we were never clear about?
Yes. It's so funny because I've been thinking about it a lot because I'm going to talk about it in my new show. And it was really an afterthought, the androgyny part of it. It was really that I was working for a guy that was so irritating to me in these ways that I incorporated in Pat.
Is he here today, by the way?
No.
Is that, no?
And he stood too close to me. He had really bad distance from people. And he was drooling a lot. His eyes were watering. And he had a lot of nasal issues. And he was always saying, like, do you want to have lunch tomorrow? And I'd say, oh, I can't. Because I used to work as an accountant. You have to understand that.
This is in your accounting days.
In my accounting days. Right. And I'd say, no, I can't. And he'd go, what about tomorrow? And I'd go, well, no. Like, he wouldn't... There was no way he'd take...
No,
he wouldn't get it. And so he drove me so crazy, and I tried to do him. I was doing him for my friends at the Groundlink Theater. That's where I came out of in L.A. And then I tried to do it at first as a guy, but I really wasn't good enough. It didn't come off. And then I thought, and it was really like an afterthought. I thought, you know what, I'll just make it that we don't know if it's a man or woman because I can't really convincingly be a guy, but it's sort of not a woman either. And then when I started doing it, that was the thing that people really responded to.
Was, right, because the character might say something, you go, oh, that's a tell, this is
right.
a guy. But then she,
right.
at the last second, make it appear as though that could have been a man or a woman. That
yeah.
would say, I need lubricant. Oh, that's maybe a guy. But then it would be for my eyes, because
right.
I have scratchy eyes or
right.
something like
yeah.
that.
So,
would
yeah.
you mind giving us a little of Pat just now?
God, I haven't done it in so long. Pat sort of talk like this. Like that. I guess I just sort of lowered my voice and
well,
had a weird laugh.
God, there's a guy out there right now going, oh, crap, that's me.
Well, I had, you know, it was an interesting experience because I had a lot of people write me. The thing is, the guy that I was imitating, obviously I'm making fun of him. But I wasn't really making fun of, you know, androgynous people who I actually like. You know, like, and I'm glad for them. But then I would start getting letters from people who were, like, intersex or androgynous who really loved Pat. And I'd think, oh, you shouldn't love Pat. Because Pat is a really horrible person.
No, Pat wasn't a horrible... I guess you're the old
well,
judge
not
of this.
Not a horrible person.
I didn't see Pat as a horrible person.
It's
kind of a pathetic person.
If I knew that Pat was going to be so popular, I wouldn't have made Pat more likable.
You would or would not
I
have?
I would have.
Would have made Pat more
yeah.
likable.
So, you know, you can find anyone now, right? Do you know where the inspiration is? Do you know where the guy is?
I do.
Is he close? Is he in the room?
No.
Did you marry him?
Yeah, I travel around with him. Yes, that's right. He's my husband.
Actually, I thought it might have been John.
I finally
but
should go to lunch.
So it's not John.
Go ahead.
So where... So, I mean...
I actually run into him occasionally. And he has no idea.
Closer, yeah.
No, he has no idea. He doesn't look anything like Pat or anything.
Would you ever tell
him? And actually, he's not that gross anymore. He, you know, this is a long time ago. We both became other different people. But he is a little odd, but not that odd. I, of course, exaggerated.
Are you ever tempted to tell him?
No. In fact, I'm so in fear of him finding out. Because I think he would be so upset. And he's not androgynous at all. He's a very much a guy. I mean, like, and I think he would take it like I was, I don't know. I don't think it would be good if he found out.
What year did you do Pat on SNL?
90 to 94.
So I wonder where we were in the whole transgender LGBTQ androgynous.
It was really early.
You were ahead of the game.
Well, was I? I mean, like, or behind the game. I don't know. Yeah, I think it was.
I mean, I wonder if you did it today, would you do it for these reasons?
Well, I think I would do it, but I wouldn't make Pat obnoxious.
Yeah. Well, so you do that. And then when you leave Saturday Night Live, you know how sometimes a skit gets made into a movie? That thing became a movie. Were you surprised at that thing? I know you wrote the movie, but were you surprised that you were able to get that movie off the ground and get it produced?
I guess so. Yeah, I was surprised. That was a whole other experience. It was exciting and fun. It had a lot of problems on the set. We went through directors. There was a lot of issues with it. And then it ended up being a big bomb, which was a whole other experience in
Well,
Hollywood.
So we'll sprint to the finish here. So that comes and goes in your life. And then you run into a series of tragedies. You lose a...
Yes, actually I had the biggest bomb. In fact, Pat was such a big bomb that Entertainment Weekly had a Pat, like, on the cover of Entertainment Weekly with over it, biggest bomb of the year. Like, just, and then that same week, my brother was diagnosed with cancer, really late stage cancer, and then I got cancer. So, that was not a good year.
So then, fast forward a little longer, you've lost your brother, you've survived, and you do a show called God Said Ha.
Yes.
And that went well for you.
Yeah, that went really well. And actually...
You were nominated for the Grammy of the CD of that.
Yeah.
Among other things.
Yes. Yeah, that was good. And I was on Broadway with it. I did it on Broadway.
And it was it your story to that point?
Yeah. And actually, my parents were living with me for almost a year while my brother was ill, and then I was ill. And every Sunday night, I went to this little club in L.A. At Luna Park, which is that no longer exists, but there was this thing there called the Uncabaret. It was sort of like the beginning of the alternative comedy, you know, like where you could just tell stories instead of jokes. So just as a release, every Sunday night, I went and was with a whole group of other comics. And I just got up and talked for 15 minutes about what happened to me that week. And it was a tiny room that could only have 50 people in the room. But I did that the whole year. And the guy who was running it recorded it all, which I didn't even know he was recording it. And then at the end, once I was, you know, cured of my cancer and I was trying to get back into work, I was trying to figure out what I was going to do. And he said, oh, I have all these tapes. You really should put all this together. And it was so great that he taped it because I forgot all these stories. Because I was just telling the stories like you would at a dinner party. And I forgot about it. So I shaped that into God Said Ha. And then I ended up doing that for several years.
And then two follow-up shows to that. Now she's in Chicago doing Older and Wider. I'm reading from the card here.
Yes.
Saturday Night Live veteran, 1990 to 1995, author, actor, and TED Talk maestro Julia Sweeney makes her Second City stand-up debut, and that's this Friday night, I believe.
Yes,
right?
But it's a workshop. I'm working towards the show being a show.
Oh, hush, hush, hush.
Okay.
So
they keep saying it's a show. It's like, no. It's like the ingredients
I
for
pay
a show.
Money, you stand up and talk, right?
And this will
Where
be
I
like,
come from, that's a show.
Okay, all okay, right.
So that's what it is. More about that in a minute here on WGN. And I want to just give one more quick plug here to Julia Sweeney, who you remember as Pat, or perhaps you saw her in God Said Ha, her show that started in San Francisco and finished on Broadway.
Wow.
And now she's in a workshop.
You must have read my Wikipedia page.
I did. And I read your, and because I do thorough research, I read your IMDb page,
oh,
too.
It doesn't stop with Wikipedia with you. You go on to IMDb.
I'm about to read her IMDb page.
D.B.
Julia Sweeney, benevolent, sweet-faced actress and comedian.
I want to be like badass, cool girl. But I'm the way I am.
I got bad news for you. You've been that.
I know I am.
I
didn't control that.
I
came out.
I don't think the world is worse off for having benevolent, sweet-faced people. Do we need more badass people, Julia? Seriously?
Well, you know what? Because it's like if people have, you know, they would say like resting face, a mean face.
RBF, yeah.
Yes. You know, they can't control that.
Well, it's
the same with me.
Let's
people
see your
think
face.
I'm really, first of all, I am really friendly.
Rest. No, that's... Let me see your resting face.
Just totally resting?
Yeah. Yeah. she's a delightful. It's a
no,
it's benevolent,
like,
and sweet.
But it's good and bad. That's all I'm saying.
Her show is in workshop right now.
It's in workshop.
It's in workshop.
You want to see how the sausage is made.
How do I do that? Go to Second
you
City?
Go to Second City, and it's going to be in a small theater. It's only 56 seats.
If you think she's delightful here, I can imagine she will be there, too. If not, ask for your money back.
And then you'll hear me ramble on as I put together a new show.
SecondCity.com. 337-3992 in Chicago on North Avenue. What a pleasure to meet you. We'll
Thank
come
you
out
so
and
much.
See your show. Visit with us again before you take this one to Broadway, too, all right?
Oh, you're so sweet.
Nice to meet you. Julia
nice
Sweeney,
to meet you.
Folks.
Thank
How about
you so
that?
Much.